Welcome to this week's episode of Dead America. I'm Ed Waters, your host. And this week, we're going to touch on a little bit of a touchy subject. We're going to dive into Ruby Ridge. We're going to discuss Ruby Ridge in a logical adult fashion. We're going to look at certain things that just doesn't quite add up. I don't want to waste a lot of time because this episode is going to be a little bit long so we can cover some of these issues that need to be talked about in America today. Why do I care so much? Because I am a true American. I don't go for the left, the right, the partisan politics. I care about America. I care about family values. I care about you and myself being able to make it without tyranny or oppression getting in our way. Before we carry on, we do not condone racism, violence, manipulation, or breaking the law of any kind. And every person deserves respect and dignity. And that is the reason this great nation was formed in the first place, to fight and combat these tyrannical outbreaks from within and from abroad. So we have to pay attention. We have to be vigilant. And most of all, we can't be afraid to speak out when we see these indifferences, these wrongs. We have to clarify our feelings, and you should never feel that you are under some sort of force or manipulation. With that being said, let's climb in. First of all, we're going to listen to the preamble of the Constitution, and then we're going to jump over and listen to the Bill of Rights. For those of you that are not aware of what the Bill of Rights is, it is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution of the United States. Let's get into Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
Preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
The United States Bill of Rights. The 10 original amendments to the Constitution of the United States. Read for LibriVox.org by Katie Gibney, Arkansas, January 2008. 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house, without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects, against unreasonable searches and seizures, shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property, without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial, by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. End of the United States Bill of Rights. This recording is in the public domain.
A standoff between a man who is wanted by the FBI and a large number of federal agents
surrounding a cabin where a fugitive named Randy Weaver is holed up with his family.
In 1992, a bloody standoff between lawmen and an armed white separatist named Randy Weaver left his wife, 14-year-old son, and a federal agent dead.
The 11-day siege at a place called Ruby Ridge, Idaho. It happened before Waco, and for many, it's an even bigger rallying cry.
I want the truth!
You've got the OK Corral. You've got certain moments in the history of American law enforcement where society says, wait a minute, we got to take a look at this in a different way. Ruby Ridge began a paradigm shift.
Paradigm shift, indeed it was. So what is a paradigm shift? A paradigm shift, a concept identified by the American psychiatrist and philosopher Thomas Kahn, is a fundamental change in the basic concepts and experimental practices of a scientific discipline. Kahn presented his notion of a paradigm shift in his influential book, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. Now I hope you understand what a paradigm shift is and why they might implement one. With that being said, I want to jump into a clip in the news recently with Donald Trump about all this hatred and stuff. Let's listen in real quick.
Now, from the debate over gun safety to a resurgent threat here in the United States. That's domestic, homegrown terrorism motivated by racism, white supremacy, hatred of government, and immigrants. The president, whose own language has been frequently condemned for stoking that hate, spoke to these issues this morning.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. We have asked the FBI to identify all further resources they need to investigate and disrupt hate crimes and domestic terrorism, whatever they need.
Whatever they need. Those, my friends, are some dangerous words when they come from government officials. As you're going to hear throughout this episode of Dead America, the government is not always the best friend to the American people. I recently heard a quote, and I do not know where I heard it from, but they quoted, quote, "The government is like a locomotive. It's hard to get it going. But once you get it going, the full force of it is a system to be reckoned with. Close quote. And that quote is so true. We have to remember, we the people are the government because we institute the government. It takes good men and women to step up and right the wrongs of a nation. If the wrongs are not righted, the moral course, it is shifted, and the obligation shifts from the people to the government. And when the government is all that matters, when they are covering their tracks, when they are lying, when they are shifty-eyed, we have problems. And we've had these problems for quite some time. It's time to address these issues. We have people in government jobs that are not doing their job. They are lying to people. They are manipulating things. And these things we need to address. We need to get our house in order. A lot of people are being affected by this bureaucratic nonsense. We, the people, need to clean house. This is not a threat of violence or an attempt to overthrow the government. This is to let the people know there are laws on the books to handle these situations. When tyrants are in control, bad things happen. Let's get back into Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
In 1971, Randy Weaver and Vicki Jordison are married in Fort Dodge, Iowa. All indications point them towards a standard Midwestern lifestyle, but the Weavers want something different.
Well, back in 1980, I guess it was, we started thinking about moving. Sarah was going to go to school, public school back in Iowa, and at the time we weren't real thrilled about that.
At that time in Iowa, parents were barred from homeschooling their children. Angered by what they view as a corrupt government, and with their religious views growing more outside the mainstream, the Weavers decide to live a life of isolation in the mountains.
We thought it'd be nice to move to the mountains and raise a family, try to raise one out in the mountains, and teach kids at home, and we were just going to do it. Prepared for about a year, got our bills paid off, sold the house, got all our ducks in a row, you might say.
In August of 1983, the Weaver family leaves Iowa and the rest of society behind and heads west.
We weren't sure exactly where we were going to go, but we figured in the Rocky Mountains somewhere.
The Weavers finally settle in northern Idaho. The small logging village of Naples has always been fertile ground for people living outside the mainstream. First, as a destination for back-to-the-earth hippies. Then in the 80s, the Weavers are part of a wave of right-wing survivalists.
People up here care about each other and are tolerant of each other. I think they enjoy each other's differences.
What I took from that sound clip is, number one, the Weavers felt that their religious values were being persecuted, and they wanted to homeschool their own kids, and they couldn't even do that. So they fled the safety and comfort of a lifestyle that they had already built, and they wanted to move into an area where they could feel less persecution. But what really happened is they found themselves in a place known to be a haven for outside the mainstream individuals. A location where right-wing survivalists were known to flock to. And of course, the Aryan Nation was in that area. But their acquaintances were about to get them tied up into a lot of headache. Let's get on with Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
And like many families in Naples, they raise animals and grow their own food. It was an idyllic life for the Weaver's children, Sarah, Sam, and the youngest, Rachel.
This used to be a garden. I didn't realize how good I had it then, but I do now. I hope my kids get to experience it. It doesn't sound as fun as it really was, but I guess you'd have to grow up that way.
As you can see, they wanted a small farm away from the mainstream so they could live a wholesome lifestyle with their family without all of the manipulation and all of the stress factors that come from living within metropolitans or populous areas. Is there anything wrong with that? I think not. Let's get on with the next sound clip from Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
As time passes, the Weavers' views move even further to the right. Their mistrust of the government increases, and the family's religious beliefs become steeped in thoughts of Armageddon and racism.
Now, I find that very interesting. That sound bite that you just listened to is extremely important. You'll understand a little bit later on why that's so important. The people of that area was injecting thoughts and ideas into the Weavers' heads. It took a while for them to change their ideas, their values. They came from a different place into a place that was inundated with certain types of people. Let's carry on with Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
But the Weavers are far from alone in their beliefs. Elsewhere in the Pacific Northwest, the white movement has become militant. A right-wing terrorist group calling itself The Order has gone on a campaign of violence, bombing banks, hijacking armored trucks, and even murdering a Jewish talk show host, all in the name of a new white homeland. After The Order is finally brought down, law enforcement quickly turns its attention to the Aryan Nations, the neo-Nazi political group where The Order had its genesis.
So we were very aggressive in our investigative efforts against these individuals and did everything we could to infiltrate the organization with sources of information.
The FBI, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, as well as state and local law enforcement, were all converging on the Aryan Nations. And in the wake of the recent terrorism in the Northwest, Aryan Nations headquarters, located just 70 miles from the Weaver cabin, is inundated with paid federal informants.
So as you heard in that little audio clip, the Weavers seem to have moved into an area that already was inundated with this paramilitary organization known as the Order, which got its genesis out of the Aryan Nation located in that area. Also, we got to take note that this Aryan Nation sect, if you will, in that area was already inundated with FBI and informants. There's something a little fishy about this. Let's carry on with some more sound clips from Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
Each summer, the Aryan Nations holds a weekend retreat for its members and possible recruits. It's 3 days of speakers, events, and Nazi pep rallies.
They call it a World Congress. It's a gathering of white separatists, some of them supremacists, people with that philosophy, basically.
And it's at one of these congresses in 1986 where a federal informant posing as a gun-running biker and using the name Gus Magisano begins a four-year relationship with an unassuming attendee, Randy Weaver.
I didn't have any idea the scrutiny that they were under by the federal government. It's Aryan Nations place.
Magisano slowly builds Randy's trust and offers him $700 for two sawed-off shotguns. In October of 1989, after sawing off the barrels himself, Randy Weaver sells the guns to Magisano. But soon after, Randy abruptly ends the relationship after learning that Magisano is actually a snitch. The ATF is now without an informant. So, with his connections to the white movement, a clean military background, and an arrestable offense to use as leverage, the ATF looks to replace Magisano with Randy Weaver.
Then I was approached by his bosses and said that they would bring federal firearms charges against me unless I joined their team, basically. And I said, well, I was not going to join their team and become an informant. And therefore, they just carried it on from there, and it, you know, got blown out of proportion after that. If I had to join their team and become a snitch and start working for them, none of this would have happened.
One full year after selling the illegal guns, Randy is finally arrested. During his arraignment, he is allowed to sign over his property as bond. But the part-time federal magistrate mistakenly tells him that if found guilty, his property will be taken away. And with their paranoid fears now seemingly proving true, the Weavers decide that rather than facing their destiny in court, their only option is to stay on the mountain.
It wasn't just Dad. It was our whole family. And we didn't want him to go down because we figured they'd put him in jail for, you know, sawing off shotguns. And we'd rather, you know, stay on the mountain and live with our family, you know, happily than have it be torn apart. But I guess that backfired.
Then we heard on the radio that the white supremacist Randy Weaver, blah, 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 didn't show up for court, but the U.S. Marshals will get their man.
Once Randy fails to appear in court, he officially becomes a federal fugitive, and his case is turned over to the U.S. Marshals Service. But unlike most cases, the marshals know exactly where Randy is. In fact, the Weavers refuse to leave their hill, even for food. And it's during this time that they gain the support of a small group of local sympathizers.
The first day I went up there, I needed to know, did he or did he not saw the shotgun off? And he told me he didn't.
Randy and Vicky turn their holdout from the law into a moral stand. They believe they are victims of religious and political persecution at the hands of an unjust government.
I felt that Randy was being picked on because of his religious and his political views. And if it happened to Randy, it could have happened to me.
Vicky begins a letter-writing campaign, making clear their beliefs to friends, family, and even law enforcement.
She wrote one to the prosecutor, maybe, and she called them servants of the Queen of Babylon, which they are. They still are, the whole bunch of them. They're all servants of Babylon. She just made them all mad as hornets. I was proud of her. Still am.
But the letters do little to help Randy's cause. And in April of 1991, the Marshals Service sends the case file, including Vicky's letters, to a psychologist. They are sent back a psychological profile, mistakenly referring to the Weavers as the Randalls, that paints an extreme picture of a paranoid family led by a fierce matriarch who are all ready and willing to fight to the death. As the months pass, the Weavers remain holed up on their remote mountaintop, and the Marshals, hesitant to approach the cabin for fear of a possible confrontation, continue sending messages through friends. In October of 91, in a small guest shed on the Weaver property, Vicky gives birth to their fourth child, a baby girl named Elisheba. With winter approaching, the family prepares for the long months ahead, and with plenty of more pressing cases, the Marshals leave the Weavers alone on their hilltop.
This is the part that I question a little bit, right here. During this period of time, this Gus individual, since 1986, had a relationship with Randy Weaver. About 4 years. This is kind of interesting to me. And another thing I want to bring up is, why Randy Weaver? Why did they need Randy Weaver? As you know from earlier, this area and this organization was inundated by the FBI, just saturated all the way through its organization. Why would they need another individual to do their narc service for them? It just does not add up to me. What about you? Let's go on to the next sound clip. In Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse rides.
But on March 8, 1992, a full year since Randy's stand had begun, a nearby newspaper from Spokane, Washington, publishes a front-page article about a local fugitive snubbing his nose at the federal government. Within days, the story catches the eye of the national media. Randy Weaver and the tough talk coming from his remote mountain quickly becomes a thorn in the side of the Marshal Service.
So as you can tell from what we just listened to, they already deemed that Weavers were not a big threat. And this thing continued to go on for quite some time under a secret veil, if you will. Let's continue listening to some of these clips that I pulled out of Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
3 weeks after the first story is printed, a special meeting is held at Marshall's headquarters. Based on neighbors' warnings, the now numerous news reports, and the growing mythology surrounding the Weavers, this remote cabin in the Idaho woods becomes the center of a complex surveillance and apprehension plan dubbed Operation Northern Exposure. During the next 5 months, the Marshal Service records over 100 hours of surveillance footage from solar-powered cameras strategically planted around the Weaver property. The surveillance clearly shows that the Weavers are almost always armed and seem to be prepared for some kind of confrontation. The cameras also show the family now joined by Kevin Harris, a 23-year-old man from Spokane who had lived with the Weavers as a teenager and looks up to Randy as a father figure.
I want to talk just a little bit about what they're saying about this surveillance footage and them being armed to the hilt and ready for confrontation at any time. These people lived in a remote part of Idaho on the top of Ruby Ridge where there is nothing. Miles from anything. Pure wilderness. You had better be prepared for things all the time out in that isolated area of Idaho. I can tell you this because I was raised in the same part of Idaho, and I know how remote and rugged you have to really be to live and sustain in this remote part of Idaho. So these bureaucrats that want to take your guns and say you have no right to protect yourself, you've really got to wonder what their true agenda is. Understand, when you live in a remote area like I do right now, you should be armed and ready to protect yourself and your property. That's what we Americans do. Let's continue to listen to audio clips from Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
As surveillance escalates, so does media coverage. The national press seems drawn to the Weaver story. Randy is billed as a local folk hero, and his plywood cabin is transformed into a mountaintop fortress.
I want to take just a moment right here and warn everybody about getting in a frenzy when you hear about something. You have to do your due diligence. Do some research on the matter, and be positive of what you are getting yourself worked up over before you jump to action. Because sometimes the media can spin things and make it sound way more obtrusive than what the situation truly is. It's like sharks feeding on chum. As soon as the first one gets that little bite, they just tear in and start ripping and tearing. This cabin, this simple plywood cabin, was made from recycled materials from local lumber mills. This was in no way a fortress, like so many deemed it to be. The way people can blow little things up is very, very dangerous. And with the fever and pitch of today, we need to take right now and think about that very witch hunt mentality. This plywood cabin. Wow. A little note on this audio clip that we are about to listen to. The officers that went up to survey the cabin, it is known now that they tossed a rock towards the dog to see how it would react. I find that very disturbing, knowing how everything played out now.
In the early morning hours of August 21st, 1992, a team of six deputy U.S. Marshals, fully armed and outfitted with night vision goggles, hike up the Weaver's Hill to gather intelligence for the final phase of Operation Northern Exposure. After 8 hours of surveying the terrain and watching the Weavers, their day is done and they begin to sneak back down the mountain. But for some reason, things don't proceed as planned. And in the hurried confusion, tragedy is about to strike.
Our yellow lab striker was so worked up and excited that I figured it had to be probably a mountain lion or a bear. And Kevin and Sam come down around behind and followed me. And I said, well, I'm going to go down the logging road and I'll meet you down to Y. And they was following the dog through the woods. Actually, I didn't know which way the dog was going to go for sure, but I wasn't going to go tramping off through the woods chasing the dog. Getting old and lazy, you know.
14-year-old Sam Weaver and Kevin Harris, 23, both armed and anticipating a wild animal, split off from Randy and chased the dog through the woods.
And I got about maybe right to here, and some guy jumped from the right side of the Y there down, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 foot right down in the center there. I could tell he had a weapon, and he was fully camoed out. All I could see basically was his eyes, and I saw his mouth move. He yelled at me, said, "Freeze, Weaver." I said, "Screw you," and turned and started running back up the hill. And I was yelling all the time. I said, get home, boys, it's an ambush.
The boys don't hear Randy, and they continue chasing the dog through the woods until they come upon the marshals. Sam Weaver's dog, Striker, reaches the marshals first.
And I heard a bang. Arr, arr, arr. They shot the dog, they shot the dog.
In the next few seconds, a flurry of panicked gunfire breaks out between the marshals and the boys. And amidst the chaos, a deputy U.S. marshal is shot and killed.
I said, get home, and Sam yells, "I'm coming, Dad," and then there was a bunch more shooting, and I took my shotgun, aimed it up in the air, and pulled the trigger, and straight up in the air, I didn't know what to do. It was after that, or like everything was over with.
With an officer down in unfamiliar territory, two of the deputies that were not in the gunfight run for nearly an hour through the woods and down the hill to the nearest neighbor, where they make a frantic call to 911.
See an officer dead. I got three pinned down. I need help quick. We had an incident with Randy Weaver. I want the state police and all the help here I can get. I got to go back in for more officers. They're trapped.
But the officers are not trapped. In fact, the marshals are completely unaware that the Weavers have also suffered a loss.
I got home pretty shortly, and then a little shortly after that, Kevin come walking home. And we said, "Where's Sam?" And he said, "Sam's dead."
Samuel Weaver, Randy and Vicky's 14-year-old son, was killed in the firefight. Shot once in the arm and once through the back.
When Kevin said, "Sam's dead," well, we just lost it. You know, we were up there and we were just... I was cussing and screaming and crying and the combination. Nobody yelled at us, nobody shot at us. I figured these guys had split the scene.
Randy, Vicky, and Kevin bring Sam back up the old logging road to their cabin, where they clean his wounds and place his body in the same shed where his baby sister, Elisheba, was born just 10 months before.
The last thing I remember about my brother was he had gone down to the garden. He had his own special radish patch, and I started to follow him down there, and he's all, "Go away, leave me alone, I want to be alone." And so there was an uprooted stump over here, and I went behind it, and I started crying, and he came over, and he apologized to me. And that was like, that was the first time he'd ever apologized to me for making me leave and making me cry, you know. And it was just, you know, it's a great thing to remember, I guess. That the last moment that you remember your brothers like that.
Before we get into this next portion of the episode, I want you to do a little research about Posse Comitatus, because that is very important. You've got to understand that this incident with Randy Weaver up on Ruby Ridge, it has so many unprecedented things involved in it, but Posse Comitatus is one of those. Also, it was the first time ever rules of engagement were used in the FBI. Do some study, because after we finish this episode, next week's episode, we look at Waco, the Red Horse Rides. Make sure you join us for next week's episode. But right now, let's listen to some of the spiraling out of control that happened after the events that had already transpired up to this point. This is where it gets very frustrating for me. Hang on. Let's listen to what goes down next on Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
But on August 21st, 1992, the FBI had never heard of Ruby Ridge or Randy Weaver. All they knew was what they were hearing from the panicking marshals.
Got a call from FBI headquarters, and he advised there'd been a shooting up at Ruby Ridge and that a marshal had been killed. The marshals were pinned down. We basically had two functions going up there. One was the rescue of the marshals, and the other one was the arrest of Randy Weaver.
The situation, as presented, leads to the decision to call in the FBI's secret weapon, the Hostage Rescue Team, or HRT. Perhaps the most elite squad of snipers and assaulters in the world. And on the way out to Idaho, somewhere over the Great Plains, Dick Rogers, the head of the HRT, in consultation with FBI Assistant Director Larry Potts, agree that the possibility of entering an ongoing gunfight, combined with the intelligence they were receiving on the Weaver family, warranted extreme measures. They begin to draft special rules of engagement to give the snipers more freedom than the standard FBI shooting policy, an action unprecedented in FBI history.
Gene Glenn is in charge, and in theory, the way the FBI manages is the negotiation team leader makes his recommendations, and the tactical team leader makes his recommendations, and the on-scene commander makes his decision from there.
But with the mere presence of Dick Rogers and the HRT, the question as to the seriousness of the situation seems to have already been answered.
We're kind of almost reverse psychology, you know. If they're here, it must be bad. Whereas if we send out a county team of five guys and a couple of negotiators, you know, this is nothing, a barricaded subject. But if these guys are on scene, whoa. You know, this is something bad's got to happen here.
Perhaps the most intimidating show of power is the FBI's use of the tank-like armored personnel carrier, or APC, the appearance of which begins to have a startling effect on the locals. Typical Western individualists who don't take kindly to intimidation.
Son of a bitches!
Come on, come on! Whatever it is, both sides are wrong. This is getting crazy. This is absolutely... Come on, get a grip, people!
How many of you against one is there, huh? We want a head count! We want to know how many are still alive up there!
As the day progresses, the FBI sets up a field headquarters in a small meadow just at the foot of the Weaver's Hill. And even though the marshals at this point are quite safe, and there has been no shooting at all for at least 24 hours, the buildup continues, and the rules of engagement somehow remain as part of the operations plan.
In my 27 years as an agent, I've been involved in an awful lot of arrests, an awful lot of raids, and this is the first time we'd use rules of engagement.
Dick Rogers said that any adult male with a weapon was a target.
The FBI's standard deadly force policy allows agents to shoot only as a defensive measure, but the final rules of engagement that are faxed to Washington include the statement, if any adult male is observed with a weapon, deadly force can and should be employed. The guns which the Weavers thought would protect them were now the very things that made them targets. Washington approves the plan, and snipers are immediately dispatched to the hill to create a perimeter around the Weaver cabin.
Before we go on, I want you to take note of this HRT, Hostage Rescue Team, led by Dick Rogers. Later on in the series, we are going to re-encounter Dick Rogers in this HRT, Hostage Rescue Team. And some of the same threatening violence will occur from this same team. Let's carry on and listen to the next set of clips on Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
As the snipers settle into position, the FBI prepares to approach the cabin, and the Weavers wait.
The other two dogs started barking a little bit and whimpering, and we was all in the house at the time, and I told everybody, I said, well, probably somebody out there approaching and they want to talk to us. So I said, I'm going to go out and see if they want to, what they got to say.
Randy, his 16-year-old daughter Sarah, and Kevin Harris leave the cabin to see if anyone is there.
Well, nobody wants to talk. It's apparent they don't want to talk to us, so I come walking from the outcropping over there.
When no one responds, Randy goes to check the guest shed where Sam's body has been laying since the morning before.
Come around the shed, and I switched the rifle to my left hand, and there was a latch up about this high on the door that you had to turn to open the door. I was going to go in and see Sam again, and just as I grabbed that latch, somebody shot me through this shoulder.
After hearing the gunshot, Vicki Weaver comes to the front of the house and calls for Randy and the kids to get inside.
Sarah started pushing me, get in the house, and she was pushing me. Kevin come down off the rock outcropping and joined in behind us. And one, two, three, we was all going like this to the house.
As the three run for the cabin, the sniper holds his fire until they approach the door.
Vicki was holding the door, standing right here holding the door. The door would have been right here. She's holding it like this with Elisheba. Bullet went through Vicky's head and killed her, and that same bullet went into Kevin's left arm and tore it up real bad, and then it split up, and the main bullet kept going in and lodged about that far from his heart.
I didn't know where Mom was hit, but I knew something was wrong because she was down, and I just started like saying Mom and crying.
And that was a very chilling moment when shots were fired. And the sniper observer team wasn't sure what they hit.
After 18 months of refusing to come down, any second chances Randy may have had are now gone. The confrontation the Weavers had predicted has come true. A U.S. Marshal has been killed. Sam's body is still in the shed. Randy and Kevin are both wounded, and Vicki now lay dead in the kitchen.
When I turned around and saw him laying there, I knew from then on we were dead meat. They were just murdering us now. And you have to be there to understand the feeling It was like I didn't even care anymore. I just wanted to kick the door down so I could take a couple with me.
The first person to actually speak out to Randall Weaver was the head of the hostage rescue team, Dick Rogers.
He gave a surrender demand?
Yeah, an ultimatum. You know, come on out or else we're going to start crushing your buildings and push your house down the cliff. And
we got no response from the captain at all.
Words are like bullets, you know. Once they come out of your mouth, you can't call them back. Makes an ultimatum like that, you can't call it back.
Meanwhile, 3 miles from the cabin where law enforcement has closed the road, locals have started to gather in protest to what they see as an outlandish show of force on the part of the federal government.
We need some warm bodies, you into it?
Yeah, they were real concerned. You know, what's going on in my neighborhood? Why have all these armed men suddenly descended into my community? It's a shock.
Yeah, you're all bad with all your guns.
Are you kidding?
But the people at the roadblock, as well as law enforcement, are still unaware of the tragedy that has just transpired on the ridge above.
Shock and awe. Have you ever heard that term? Did you hear the threats about pushing your cabin down the mountain? These are the very same tactics that this very same team uses later on in this series against Waco and the people at Mount Carmel, Texas. Make sure you join us next week when we talk about Waco, Texas, and we dive into this calamity of concern. This raises intent, the issue that this team made threats of such nature, and not long after, at an incident relating to religious individuals, they were attacked with these very same principles. We're going to use armored vehicles to push in to your compound. They called Mount Carmel a compound also. Everything these people go up against, it seems they're going up against a compound instead of a living place, a dwelling area, a communal establishment. People, you need to realize what's going on, and that's why we are speaking out here at Dead America. Make sure you go over to deadamerica.website, send us an email, podcast@deadamerica.website, get involved, speak out, and speak up. We have horrifying things going on in America. Whether you like it or not, it is in your name. We have the power to change these things, and we need to start standing together instead of bickering. Let's address the problems in a very humble adult fashion. Let's carry on with Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
Randy Weaver has told friends all he wants is to be left alone. But with the sudden appearance of military hardware like this, his one-man stand against the law is suddenly taking on the appearance of a full-blown war.
We need this for one man, his wife, and his kids in a cabin?
On day 3 of the standoff, with more troops still arriving, earth-moving equipment is brought in to widen the roads and build a new bridge, allowing larger trucks and even more equipment up the mountain.
The command post area was taking on kind of a little community appearance. It was growing very rapidly. It seemed like new people were showing up all the time. It was a busy little place.
Some people were getting ready to go to work. Some people were just getting off of work. Others people were playing horseshoes or jogging or taking a shower. Only thing we didn't have was a movie theater.
Don Kasulis was part of an FBI SWAT team from Denver, Colorado. They were one of the few units at Ruby Ridge that spoke out against the special rules of engagement.
I remember I just said, that's ridiculous, or that's crazy. We kind of talked about it, and we decided we weren't going to go by those rules.
Don't you think we ought to consider when we can shoot and when we can't? Shouldn't that be, like, foremost in our minds? It apparently wasn't.
To the negotiators, the situation is simple.
As far as I'm concerned, it's an easy barricade sitting on top of a mountain. Why don't we just sit here and wait?
Now the question that I have about all of this, why all the buildup? Why all the need for such a grandiose show of force with a simple no-show warrant? This really, it's disturbing. And you need to ask yourself why. Let's continue to add to the puzzle and get to a few more of these pieces that need to be put into place for a better understanding. Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
The next big thing we heard was like tracked vehicle coming in the yard. And we heard a lot of scrunching and crashing, and while they were running over the woodshed. And I told the kids that, you know, they're going to push the house over. That's what I thought they were going to do.
The FBI uses the APC to clear out the area and gain control of the property. But it comes to a stop just before the guest shed.
For some reason, one of the HRT guys just jumped out of the APC out the back and opened up this door. And that's when they discovered Sam's body.
Sam's body had been lying in the shed for 2 days. At that point, the possibility that any of the Weavers might have been hurt had not even been considered.
We had no information that he'd even been shot at. So these are all things that happen, and you can have all the control of things. You can control property, high ground, and everything. But people's minds. And we didn't know what they were thinking because we couldn't understand their losses. And that changed everything.
Federal officials have just announced Randy Weaver's 13-year-old son died during the initial shootout Friday. Protesters and neighbors are apparently not taking the news well.
Are you proud of yourself? Are you proud of yourself? You're going to kill all the children to get one man.
When you don't give the public the truth, you get very ill-tempered and ill-mannered people coming to the forefront to address the grievance that they feel inside them. So if you incite this within them from withholding truth and information from them, well, bad things happen. And it's unfortunate what happened up at Ruby Ridge. And we all need to take time and reflect on the mannerisms that our officials in every level of government, from a janitor to the White House, they all need to know there's proper protocol to address the American public and to assert overzealous will upon them. It's not very well accepted. And that's how these people feel when they get excited by seeing these nuances of such magnitude coming towards them. It's time to slow down. Get a hold of yourself. Let's stop getting mad and let's start understanding. Let's continue listening to Ruby Ridge, the Red Horse Rides.
On Tuesday, day 5 of the standoff, the FBI finally investigates the crime scene. They quickly learn that what the marshals had been reporting may have been greatly exaggerated.
You know, if you're pinned down for 12 hours, there's got to be several hundred rounds that have been fired, maybe several thousand rounds to pin down that many people. And we didn't find the shell casings. We didn't find the rounds. Found a few.
The special rules of engagement, which are still officially in place, are finally called off.
This next portion kind of intrigues me a little bit because they allow Bo Greitz to come in to negotiate, and you've got a hostage rescue team and a negotiator team on scene, and they had not been able to get anything accomplished with their efforts in such a long period of time. And then Bo comes in. Well, just listen to the accomplishments made by Bo Greitz. Let's listen more to Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
I hollered back and I told him, I said, I'll talk to Bo Greitz.
The FBI lets Bo Greitz, a Green Beret commander and right-wing icon, pass the roadblock to talk to Randy, even though they know he's a risk.
Bo accomplished more during that first evening than all the negotiation had from the beginning to that point. And so that was a positive thing. The negative of Bo's dialogue was we found out a lot of things that were kind of shocking.
And then is when he told me about Vicky, and I was shocked.
I've never been shocked by any single event in my 21 years as I was by that one sentence uttered by Randall Weaver. Vicky's been killed, I've been shot, and Kevin's been shot.
Randy's in good health. Unfortunately, Vicky is dead.
Karen, the news earlier tonight, just a few moments ago, that Vicky Weaver, the wife of Randall Weaver, has been shot and killed. She was shot and killed last Saturday and has been dead for 6 days. It's a very volatile situation, although it appears to be quiet at this moment.
Yes, this will be a tense night on the roadblock.
It never entered our mind that she was anything but an active person in the cabin up there. So that was a tough night.
Word buzzing through all quarters that this might indeed be the big day.
On day 9 of the standoff, Bo Greitz returns at dawn to keep the dialogue going, and Randy Weaver makes sure that Bo understands what actually happened.
The door's open like this.
Yep.
I said, what happened? I said, I'm hit. She goes, those sons of bitches. She turns around and here's the door. They knew she was there. My daughter and her and the baby was right there.
As the Weavers tell Bo their story, they learn that one of their biggest fears was true.
That thing's so shut that I don't want to see it.
Yeah, start off struggling, boy, right there.
I don't want to see it.
Grab that telephone. Boom.
The robot was setting right in front, right up against, and right in front of the door. The robot had a claw, and it had a 12-gauge shotgun that was pointed right in the door.
That's right. The robot did have a weapon. I forget what it was, a shotgun or something. But once again, as far as I know, that was an oversight.
At that point in time, Randy and the remaining members in his family were not feeling too secure about exiting what they termed their compound, the simple plywood cabin. Already being shot, his wife being shot, his son being shot, a lot happened. And yet, a lot more requests had to happen before resolve comes to this matter. Let's listen in more to Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
Dick Rogers was standing there with a group of FBI agents, and I simply stated I needed something to clean with. They had shut the water off. And they handed me 2 5-gallon buckets of water and towels and paper towels, and I went back in the cabin and cleaned.
Jackie Brown is allowed to clean the kitchen, unwittingly destroying evidence that could potentially damage the FBI.
Anytime a crime scene is disturbed, there's evidence that's lost. And when Vicki Weaver's blood was cleaned up, there had to be some loss of evidence.
But it was just something that had to be done.
Even after all the ill-warranted violence thrust upon this simple family upon the ridge way up in the northern part of Idaho in the midst of nothing, the HRT team was not quite finished yet doling out threats of violence and servitude pleads to the simple family that was left stuck within the cabin walls, pleading for their very life. Let's listen in to the rest of Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
That night, even with all the progress being made, the HRT begins to show signs that they are getting restless.
Dick Rogers told me, if you cannot get them out by noon, we are taking them out.
You know, we've already done some of the incredibly stupid things. It's just one more incredibly stupid thing.
Bo Greitz has no more time to appease the family. He has to get the Weavers out right then and there.
He said, Weaver, tonight's the night. They're coming after you. If you don't come out, you got to come out now or you're going to be dead and all this. And by this time, I had a feeling that maybe we could come out without getting shot. And so I said, this is it, girls. We got to go now. You know, and so we did.
I had Randy Weaver with an iron grip. And I looked over, and Randy had Elisheba. And by God, we walked down that hill. And his little girls, I think, while they were terrified, I think they honestly began to think that maybe they wouldn't be shot down. And God, that's what you're supposed to think in America, for crying out loud.
Two words it seems that all of us have been waiting to hear. It's over. An 11-day standoff that took 3 lives has now ended with the surrender of Randy Weaver.
Randy is taken into custody and immediately flown by helicopter to medical attention before being taken to jail in Boise by private jet. It is the first time he's ever flown.
Now for the part that just kicks you right in the gut so hard. These feelings are visceral, and many Americans feel the same way. The wrongs that were perpetrated to an American family, regardless of their belief system, as long as they were not harming other people and there was simple charges, I ask again, why such violence? The need to show such force against the American people in such a mannerism? I ask you to reflect. Let's finish listening to the remainder of Ruby Ridge, The Red Horse Rides.
Randy is found not guilty of all but the original failure to appear charge, for which he serves an additional 6 months in jail.
If I could, you know, do over and then I could read the guy's mind, I wouldn't have sold him those guns. But as far as anything else concerned, no, I'd do it again.
In 1994, the Weaver family files a civil suit, and 1 year later, the federal government settles for $3.1 million.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
We should always be aware of what our government is doing, how they are interacting, especially with the American people, but not only the American people, but around the world. Atrocities happen daily if you let them. It's time to step up, speak out, and make sure we hold people accountable for their actions. Join us next week, right here on Dead America Podcast, when we dive deep into Waco, Mount Carmel, and the Red Horse Rides. Thank you for your listen. Share, like, subscribe. Ed Waters, out.